magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Wednesday, November 14th, 2018. I don't know if you were like me yesterday waking up, but that snow, and I don't know, I guess it's going to remain kind of cold. And Holly and I keep talking about it's going to get warm again, right?
I don't know.
Do you have a prophecy on that?
Do I have a prophecy?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't have a prophecy. I wish I could stay under the covers and in the bed much longer, because it is that kind of cold morning where you wake up and you go, you know, it's like where you're laying in your bed and that spot that you're in is the perfect warm spot.
The cocoon.
But if you inch 1 inch to the left or to the right, you're into the cold territory.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just stay nice and still and you're like, I don't need to move. And then all of a sudden,
the reality.
The alarm goes off. The kids, you know, in our house, there's two things that happen. The alarm goes off, so you could be laying in bed, sound asleep. Meep, 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 meep. You know, the alarm goes off, and then you're like, ugh. And then 2 seconds later, you hear the toilet seat flip.
The children.
Yeah, because Jacob's always the first one up because he goes to take a shower. You hear the toilet seat flip up and hit the back of the toilet, and then you hear the shower kick on. And then you know it's like it's go time.
Yeah. What do they call that? Not the alarm clock. It's the opportunity clock.
Yeah, I guess.
Some people wake up and say, good God, it's morning. Others say, good morning, God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kind of like the snow. I like looking outside and going like, I love when the seasons, and not only it's the seasons, but also the scenery changes, you know, and drastically, because you go, oh, wow, you know, it just shows us how powerfully, at least for me, how powerfully the Lord is at work. Like, yesterday, the grass could be green and, you know, leaves are on the ground. And the next day, you can't see the ground because it's white and it's covered and the air is real crisp and it's cold. And, you know, just reminds me that, you know, he's moving the entire seasons,
right.
You know, and how powerful that is. So,
yeah, it was kind of funny. On Monday, Holly did all this raking, like from early morning time, and then ran some errands and did some afternoon. And as soon as she was just finishing up, I think she bagged, I don't know, 15 of those industrial size Sam's Club bags that are made to accept leaves or whatever. And then you can put them out on the curbside. Anyway, she got it all done and really proud of herself. And it actually was a ton of leaves. I think it was 15 bags worth. And those are those big bags. Anyways, I got home after the Singing Men rehearsal and it had snowed and everything. So literally all the ground was covered. So I couldn't tell that she had done anything. She goes, what do you think of my leaf job? And I'm like, you did all the leaves? Because there was a ton in the back area. I was like, well, I couldn't tell. The snow covered the ground. It looks like there's no change. He said, but didn't you see all the bags in the garage? And I said, yeah, I saw them. Great job, you know. But I had looked, and there were three different neighbors down
right there,
the road.
Did you hear the did you hear the navigation system going, pull up, pull up?
Yeah. It was like, oh, yeah, husbandry 101 did kick in right away. Because I then made
I didn't see anything. You worked?
Yeah. Well, that, and then there was some neighbors down the lane, or down the way, a couple different blocks over, that had like 32 of these bags. I mean, see,
wait,
they
so you didn't notice her work, but you noticed the neighbors.
I don't, because they were all out at the curbside, and I thought, wow, they saved up their leaves. We've done these leaf raking and, you know, the power leaf blower and all that, like four different times already. And then there was a time or two where I used the mower and mulched them up, and then they're, anyway, so we've been doing it over a period of time, so it wasn't crazy, crazy filled, filled yard of leaves. But this other house, I think, must have weighed in. So there were two of these yards that had just had, like, probably 30, 35 of these. I mean, it was an imposing wall of these leaf bags. And so when I saw, like, the 15 in the garage, it was significant. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I had already thought, well, that's, I didn't make the right move.
I'll tell you a funny story. So on Saturday, it was Saturday, we were at Farm and Fleet. And this guy in front of us in the checkout line, he had like, you know, I don't know, what are they sold as? Like bundles of five? We have like one little tree.
Yeah.
And luckily, the wind blows the leaves into the other people's yards. Yeah, we're that guy.
Yeah.
But my neighbors. How many? Like, there's like five in there, right? I mean, he had like a bunch of packs. I mean, it was a good stack of them. So we're in the checkout line, and the woman who's the cashier, she says, oh, you got a lot of leaves. And this guy, like, just timing was everything. He was just deadpan. He goes, no, these are my lunch bag. I use these for lunch.
Oh, jeez.
And she did not get it. Like, she was like, And he goes, yeah, there's, like, a lot of room. I can get everything in there.
Oh,
And it was funny because then it was like this moment where he was just deadpan and she didn't know what to do. And then they both busted out laughing right there. And he goes, yeah, my whole yard, we didn't pull the trigger fast enough. But she just, at first she did, his timing was perfect. And then everybody in the line started laughing because everybody was like, what's going to happen?
And these are big industrial size.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those things are like 6 feet high or 5 feet high. And so for him to say, these are my lunch bags.
Exciting times. We do have the privilege here in Illinois to have those seasons and to see God so actively at work. And that's why when springtime comes and flowers and new growth, and yet just the fall changes, and then the wintertime, obviously, it presents different challenges, and yet other people love God's handiwork. You know, they say that of the bazillions of snowflakes, they're all created uniquely different, and then that kind of reminds you about how God is, the sovereignty of God that can do all things, that knows all things, how he creates us all different.
I think everybody loves God's handiwork from inside the house.
I don't know. Larry Bunning, he likes this colder temperatures.
I like this weather right now. This is great. Get out and do like a nice walk and that. It's a good weather to be outside. Jacob had this leaf raking job that he needed to get done. And because of the last couple weeks while this person was out of town, it had rained and it's that little bit of snow. I mean, every day just kind of there was something that derailed him from being able to get it done. And so we said, you know, we're going to have to go over there as a family and do it. And Tasha's in Romania, lucky for her. But we went over there as a family. And, yeah, I don't know that we were enjoying God's seasonal change that day.
That's right.
You know, four of us trying to rake all these leaves in this yard. And I was just like, you know, I wasn't like, oh, God. I was like, oh, God, kill you guys. I agree with you. I love it. And this is the kind of weather. I mean, I love spring and fall. Those are probably my favorite. Though I like summer. I like laying by the pool and doing those kinds of things. But I like this weather. You can get out and walk and just, we've been walking every day, so I feel like, get me out there.
Hey, updates on Tasha. When's she officially back? And I've seen
Everybody is listening to this program right now, she's home. She woke up this morning and we got to see her smile and the kids were crazy and they were just kind of nuts and, you know, trying to get them out the door and to school was much harder. Yesterday we got to eat our last bag of candy. What we did is...
the posting of the M&Ms.
Well, we were trying to figure out something to do. You know, we have a ton of Halloween candy and we have her being gone. And so how do we mark time and how do we teach the kids to create a rhythm during this? And so what we did is we took a little snack baggie and we have these magnets on our fridge that has like a clip. And so I put up 13 bags, you know, each dated November 5th, November 6th, November 7th, you know, with four pieces of candy in each one, four kids, four pieces of candy, all the same kind of candy. So we didn't have any like World War III or anything like that. And the kids' favorite candy is M&M's because they say, you know, even in the Halloween candy, that little M&M's, there's a lot of candy in that little bag. Yes. So they love it. So every day,
piece count.
Yeah, every day, yeah, totally. It's all about how many you get out of it. So every day, we would open a bag and eat the candy, and we would pray for it. And we would say every day, and I got this from, you know, how the Jews would pray for Psalm 119. When they were teaching young Jewish boys the scriptures, they would take the tablet that they used to write scripture out to help them to memorize it. They would put honey on the tablet, and they would have the Jewish boys lick the honey. And they would say, as sweet as this honey is, sweeter is God's word. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we were kind of modeling that, we would say, you know, as sweet as and as good as this candy is, your mom is so much sweeter, and we miss her sweet presence. And we would pray for how her sweet presence was blessing those people that she might have been with, whoever she was with that day.
Sure.
You know, we would say constantly, you know, her smile, which makes us feel so good, is being shared now with so many people. That's God's using her gift of her smile. And so, yesterday we got to eat that last bag, the M&Ms, and so all the kids were super excited that they got the M&Ms. What was fascinating was I thought they'd be excited because of the M&Ms, and we ate them in the morning. So we never eat candy in the morning. So we ate them in the morning because we knew that she would be traveling all day Tuesday, so we wanted to pray and pray for her travels, not pray at the end of the day before we go to bed and eat the candy. So we ate the M&Ms in the morning. So I thought, like, number one is the M&Ms. Number two, we're eating it in the morning. So that's like M&Ms for breakfast. Wow, this is great.
Kids' paradise.
But they were not excited about the M&Ms necessarily, and they were not excited about eating them in the morning. They were more excited about the fact that their mom was coming home.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so funny because I don't know what it was, but Abigail has this journal, and I wouldn't want them to read my journal that I keep, so I don't read theirs. But she had it open and she was writing something. So as I was putting the M&Ms at their places at the table, she has a journal that she shares with her mom. And on one side of the page, Tasha writes something, and on the other side of the page, Abigail can write something. That page is blank. And so there's a lot of times where Abigail doesn't write anything. She's young. She's 7 years old. Hmm. But I don't know exactly the context because I didn't read all of it. But somewhere Tasha wrote, "I know I'm not always the best tooth fairy." And, and I think that's because sometimes when the kids lose their teeth, they put the tooth under the pillow, and Tasha totally forgets about it. So then we have to be like, "Oh yeah, the tooth fairy gave us the dollar to give to you. Here it is. They couldn't get the door open or something." Yeah, we always come up with some kind of excuse. And yesterday morning, and it kind of made me tear up, is Abigail wrote, and she's got big, kind of messy 7-year-old writing. She wrote, "You are not the worst tooth fairy ever. You are the best mom ever."
Wow.
And so it was just, she was using that journal and those things that her mother had written to her to remind her of her mother. So it was a powerful moment. And so it was funny. It wasn't about the M&Ms. It wasn't about eating them in the morning. They were all just talking about, when mom gets home. And then, when she got home, it was exactly that. They were like, "Wow, she's home," and hugged the heck out of her. Poor lady.
Oh, yeah.
She's probably hospitalized right now.
And for those unfamiliar with this narrative, Tasha, I guess, 13, 14, a couple weeks ago, was planning to leave,
days.
Went to Romania.
Yeah.
And the focus was on the gypsies, I believe, or something that you had already established relationships in the
past.
She'd
been there
with.
Before. In fact, she's plotting her return now already. She's already plotting the next trip because she really feels called to God to go and to minister to these kids. And, you go one time. And you're there, and the people receive you on a certain level. But when you come back again and they see your face again, they know there's some intentionality there. And so the relationships deepen, and the ability to be able to speak into their lives deepen. And one of the things that's really interesting, you have to divide the two. There's Romania, and then there's the Roma. And the Roma are the gypsies. And Roma gypsies are everywhere. They're all over Europe. They're in the Ukraine. They're all over. They're in Romania, Budapest. And those are... my wife had to explain this to me. I didn't really understand. Because I said, "What language do they speak?" And she said, they speak Romanian because they're in Romania. But they speak Roma, which is based like a Hindu-based language. I said, "Well, why would it be a Hindu-based language?" She said, "Because the gypsies originally came from India."
Hmm.
They left India. So the gypsies that are all over have roots long, long ago in India. And I said, "Wow, I didn't really know that." But inside of that gypsy, that Roma culture, wherever they are, whether they're in France, whether they're in Budapest, whether they're in Romania, they are not accepted by the society. They are considered to be lesser class, a drain upon the society. They're hated. They're vilified. And
yeah,
so,
the outcast, kind of like in India, the untouchables.
They're really an outcast. In fact, one of the things that the woman who runs this ministry, Forget Me Not Ministry, Rachel Ross, when the Roma go to the hospital, they have to go to a Romanian hospital. When they go, she has to have bribe money ready because the Romanian doctors don't believe that the Roma feel pain. And so they won't give them anesthesia. They won't give them the things that they need to have in order to do that because they feel like they're lesser people. They're not. And I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, there's so many things we take for granted. But when you go inside their houses and the pictures that Tasha brings back of their homes, I mean, they live in like 1 or 2 room homes, no bathroom. They go to the bathroom in their yard. So when you walk in their yard, you have to like walk stealthily like you do when somebody has a dog because human people have been going to the bathroom in their yard. And neighbors, to try and preserve their own yard, will go to the bathroom in their other neighbors' yards when their neighbors are not looking. But you go into their one or two room homes and they have an old wood-burning stove and they still burn wood. And the fascinating thing is they can't necessarily buy wood. That's very hard for them to do because economically they don't have the money to be able to do it. So they have to go out and collect wood. But collecting wood is illegal in Romania. So oftentimes the Roma men are caught collecting wood by the Romanian police, and the police don't arrest them. They just beat them. And so then they have to go to the hospital. And they don't feel pain, so they don't receive anesthesia or proper care. So they're just considered to be a lesser people. And then within their culture, there are some very hard, difficult, horrible kinds of things. Like within the Roma culture, when a girl is 11, she's considered to be a woman, ready to be married. And so when a girl turns 11, all the older, it's not like she turns 11 and another 11-year-old boy comes along and goes, I'm a man, you're a woman, let's get married. When the girls turn 11, the 50 and whatever year old Romanian men start showing up going, I want to take her as my bride. And it's not like, hey, I'd like to buy you some flowers. Can I take you to a movie? Can I do all that? The Romanian men come and they go, you're mine now. Hmm. And so one of the things that Rachel Ross does is she tries to protect the teenage girls to get them through their teens. Like I said, a lot of the men come and they just steal the girls away to become their wives. There's culturally, that's acceptable. The other thing that happens is they're taken away and they're used in prostitution. Mm. It's not uncommon. In fact, Budapest, it's listed. One of the things that drives their GDP, their growth national product, is prostitution. Mm. And prostitution particularly of young girls. And so, you know, it would not be uncommon to go to one of those areas and to find a prostitute who's 12, 13, 14 years old. Mm. And so when Tasha and the team are there, the teens are there. The teens love Tasha. They love Sarah. They love the Peggy Meyer. They love Barbara. They love all those folks on the team. So they were having all these sleepovers. And just a great time for Tasha and the other ladies to be able to speak into their lives. And one of the interesting things is Tasha recounted or relayed to me that one of our FaceTime phone calls, that one of the big prayers for the ministry right now is that a Christian family, an intact Christian family, a father, mother, and some kids would all come over together and spend 2 weeks there to model for the Roma what a family looks like, how a family operates, because they don't see that. Rachel is single, so she doesn't have a spouse, and she's not interested really in getting married. She's not interested in that. She's interested in what God has her doing there. And so that's one of the kind of calls on their ministry, because there's one family, and now maybe there's two, who are Christian families. You know, Christy and his wife Melina are Christian family. They want to live a Christian ethic. He treats her well.
And these are former, or these are gypsies.
These are Roma gypsies. And he treats her well, and he loves her, and his community ostracizes him and makes fun of him and treats him horribly because of it. It's not uncommon for Roma men to sit and to berate their wife, to throw rocks at their wife. They're allowed to, within their culture, they're allowed to beat their wives. Mm. It's kind of, it has some of the tenets of Islam, where they can come and tell their wife, you know, I want to be intimate with you. And the wife says no, they can beat them. Mm. They can just, you know, so it's a real tyrannical kind of male patriarchy that they allow to happen there. And so Christy doesn't want to live that way. And so men will come to him and go, why don't you just make your wife do this? He goes, because I love her. Why would I want to make her do that? I want her to joyfully want to do this. And they go, oh, you're just a wuss. You know, you're weak. You're not a man. You're not that. And sometimes they beat him up for it. Uh-huh. And so, you know, they really want a Christian family to come over there and be able to say, this is what this looks like. Uh-huh. And because they have a lot of respect, you know, they look at Americans and they go, how is it that you've gotten to where you've gotten? And so they maybe allow us to say some things that, and they're responsive to some things that they, but they don't have a lot of Christian men who come over there and go, this is what,
right.
Because there's children involved. A lot of the mission work, I think, tends to be women. Even our team that's over there now, that was over there, was all women.
Right.
So
you shared this, and I was hoping it was going to come out in that interview we had last week with Dr. Russell Moore, but it was the example you were sharing with me. You know, here you're being Mr. Mom and taking care of the kids and doing a little of everything.
Yeah.
And that one incident where Samuel was on the phone, I think you were FaceTiming, and then he abruptly ended that.
Oh, yeah.
Share a little of that. It was so heartwarming and encouraging.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were sitting at the table, and I think it was around lunchtime. Lunchtime seemed to be, for Tasha, the best time to call, because, you know, 12 or 1 for us was like 8 or 9 there. Mm-hmm. So everything was winding down, and she was able to call. Really had trouble with getting a time for the other kids. So Samuel and I were sitting, and we had just gotten back from doing something, and we were eating lunch, and she called. So we put the phone on, talking about it, and Samuel was showing her a dinosaur that he had gotten for his birthday and all this. And then all of a sudden, he stands up, and he hits the end call button on the phone.
Yeah.
And she was mid-sentence. And I go, buddy, why did you do that?
Like, basically hanging up on
his
mom.
Yeah, you just hung up on your mom in Romania. What did you do? And he goes, Papa, my heart hurts so bad right now when I look at her because I want to give her a hug. And so, I mean, that's like real life, where he goes, I can't even look at her anymore because I want to be near her so bad.
And if you didn't understand the complexity there, in a sense, here's a little child, so loves his mom, loves to connect with her,
but it was hurting him so much that, you know, you kind of process it. But why would you hang up on someone you love so much, but it hurts so much? That was his only his reaction was like, I can't take it anymore.
Well, yesterday morning before we got to the M&Ms, you know, the candy was hanging on the fridge. He came downstairs, you know, it's like 6:25, and I'm making coffee, and he's just standing by the fridge, and he's hitting the door of the fridge, you know. Papa, look. Look, Papa. Last one. Yeah. Look, I mean, he was so excited. He knew. And so I go, wow, well, that thing we did was kind of successful because he really was marking time. He was seeing how many more bags of candy was there. And he was so excited when it was the last one. And he was telling me before he went to BSF yesterday, he was saying, you know, Papa, when Mama gets home, I'm going to hug her and I'm going to kiss her. And I'm going to hug her, and I'm going to kiss her.
Wow.
And then one of the other kids said, they go, well, can we hug her and kiss her? He goes, when I'm done.
Oh, jeez.
Which was not ever.
Yeah.
You know, so I it'll be interesting because I had said to the kids that she was plotting her next trip.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, we get to do family votes, right?
Yeah,
I said, well, maybe, but I said, you got to argue with God then, because God's the one who keeps calling your mom to go there.
Yeah. And we know that from past Israel trips. Sometimes you have to defrag or process it all, or, you know, I'm not ready to even evaluate or determine whether there's going to be a future trip or whatever. And yet we've all both had times where we came back and we're like, wow, I think God's already going to start stirring up the next trip. So it was obviously a very positive experience for Tasha. Well, and positive could be measured many different ways, but the fact that God worked through that experience and is already prodding her to plan for the future is a very good sign.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about it in depth, but I think it was a very good trip. I think the connections deepened. I think her grasp of the mission deepened. I think it is like Israel trips in a way, that there's a point where you traverse from being a spectator to being a more intimate part of the trip. You know, you start taking on other roles in the trip. And so I think that's what's happened.
Wow.
Well, that was, I didn't know we were going to go there. I know you had your Bible open. And, you know, I think
I always plan for one thing and then let you take me somewhere else.
That's right. Well, we want to be mindful of all those that are on short-term mission trips, those missionaries that are serving in various countries, or inner-city missions for that matter, those that are helping those that don't know the good news message of the Lord Jesus Christ. Mm. So take that opportunity. Maybe you know somebody, or maybe God through this broadcast prodded your heart to entertain the idea. Maybe he would call me to serve in Romania and be that Christian family. You know, God works in mysterious ways, and maybe this is time for you to serve in this unique role, or to entertain the possibilities he would call you to do something around the world, or maybe just from the homesteads.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.